Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Talking with a man from Texas who's written a lot of books, Mr. George Weir. How are you?
I was doing all right, but I'm completely over that now.
Well, we'll try to make it worse for you.
Okay, good.
So, how did? Well, let's get back to this. Like you, you've written a lot of books. So, where did it start for you? And not only where did it start, but why did it start?
Huh. Oh boy, that one's loaded. That's a loaded question. So I started fairly young. In fact, I was probably 9 or 10 years old, walking around. You take a piece of paper, fold it in half, or several sheets of paper, fold them in half, put staples along that fake spine you've got there, color the cover of it, and then write what you want inside. And I give those to people like, here's my book, you know. I don't think anybody was impressed with that, and I've been trying to impress them ever since, I think. But now, I guess in 1986, what was I, 23 years old, 21, something like that, I made a bet with myself that it was April Fool's, April 1st, 1986, that I was going to play a joke on myself, practical joke. Let's see if you can write a book, cowboy. And so, damned if I wasn't able to do it. I was able to get all the way done, complete, finito. It was pretty horrible. It's not anything I'd recommend to anybody. In fact, I hope that there are no copies of that first book around anywhere. And after about 4 or 5 more books, I moved to Austin in 2002, and I was looking through bookstores here. I was looking for kind of an action adventure mystery book series, or just a couple of books like that, that were somewhat Austin based because it was going to be my new home, and you know, I was all alone here, and I couldn't find any in the bookstore. I went to all the bookstores. Went to the Half Price bookstore here. That's where Half Price started out, was here in Austin. And I was looking through the stacks, and I was like, you know, there's nothing here. And then I said, well, if I'm going to read an action adventure Austin based mystery, I'm going to have to write it myself. And I was like, wait a minute, what? And I went back home from the bookstore, empty-handed, And I sat down and I wrote out about 21 or 25 titles for a new mystery series. And right now I'm banging away on number 20. Just in fact, this morning, today, book 19, Amarillo Waltz, was published. And so there you go. And I've got 39 different different books out there. I just never learned my lesson. I don't know when to stop, apparently. And that's you wanted to know. You wanted to know. You asked me. It's your fault. Yes,
it's my fault. Listen. So okay. So what made you choose to write in this style? Like when you're doing fiction, crime, mystery, etc. This is what you read, or this is what you really like?
Well, I make it a habit not to read other people's mysteries. I principally read, if I'm going to read, I read science fiction, or I'll read something else. Now, the exception to that is I have friends who are mystery authors. I've got a great number of friends who are mystery authors, and occasionally have to read one of their books. And they're wonderful. These people are wonderful. Some women, some most of them guys. And but I don't read a lot of mysteries because I just don't want them to influence me overly much. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
right.
the thing, and like I said, and I've got a few science fiction out there, and I'm enjoying those when I write those. The thing is, for me, the action adventure mystery, the style of that is there's an immediacy to it. I mean, I'm not going to write a book, a mystery, an action adventure, if I can't put the reader in the scene and have them see and smell and breathe in everything that's going on, and then put some pressure on them and get them wrapped up in the thought processes of the main character such that they almost become the main character as they're reading, and then they're just pulled forward with what is going on and with what's being said and everything. Because I'll tell you, when I'm in that mode, I don't think I'm in this world. I'm in this other scene. It's a full-blown movie going on. I'm reporting what I'm seeing, and I'm in it when I'm writing it, and I have no idea what's coming next either. You know what I mean? Hmm. And that's it's almost like a drug, actually. It's a bit of an addiction for me. When I write one of these books, they become, after 19 books in the series, working on 20, they become such a an addiction, or such. They're so easy for me to write. It's easy for me to step into that world and write. But the problem is that the life of Bill Travis, from the age I started writing these books until present time, his life is a translation of basically what's not necessarily what's going on in my life, but the timeline is pretty much the same. So this series will come to an end, but I've already started writing the young Bill Travis mysteries. I'm going to take him from age 16 and then on up to probably his like early 20s, and then I'm going to start the new Bill Travis mysteries, which will take him from 22, 21, something like that, all the way up to 39 years old when the first book, The Last Call, kicks off. So I've got 13 titles for the young Bill Travis mysteries. I don't have any titles yet for the new Bill Travis mysteries, but I see this as being about 60 books by the time I'm done with just that series.
So you're kind of slow at doing them.
Yeah, I think I'm slow. I think it's slower than molasses in January. It's glacial. It's plate tectonics. It's California moving 1 inch into the Pacific Ocean a year for me. But I guess for all practical purposes, it took me 4 weeks to write the Amarillo Waltz, and with the majority of that being done in the last 2 weeks. Mm.
So
the fastest book I wrote was 11 days, and that was that was my best. Actually, it was my best work, and it's not a Bill Travis book.
That's not normal. Like I've talked to a lot of writers over the last 10 years, and this is not a normal process. In fact, some of them call me a nut because I will start a book and finish it. Well, the basis of the book in 2 months. But I do a couple of years research because I'm doing true crime. I'm doing a live event. You're doing something that comes out of your mind. So that's not normal to do it so fast. As far as I see.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I'm necessarily normal.
Probably.
I don't know. The jury's out. I like to think that I'm just a regular guy. And I think I am, you know, but, you know, writers absorb everything that's going on around them. We're sponges we're all SpongeBob walking around, soaking up the universe around us. And every conversation I ever heard, I've got it, man. And I know how people react and think and feel, and I know, you know, where everything is and how it's put together. I use every bit of that in my books, and so
Who's Bill Travis?
Go ahead.
Who is Bill Travis?
You know, that is also a trick question. You know that I think he is Bill is who I would have been had I done things just a little bit different. In fact, just right now, I am going through the process. I have an appointment on Thursday to be fingerprinted and that sent to the FBI to get my PI license. You know, I've been involved also with true crime a little bit, helping other people out mostly. It's mostly helping other people get their books out and whatnot. And I have not written a true crime book of my own just because I'm not that disciplined. I have to applaud you for being able to put one out and it being good and right and yet also compelling and all that other stuff. So there you go. But Bill Travis is the me that could have been, or maybe should have been, or the me that wasn't.
So
there you go.
Well, how do you? But okay. So from the very first time you wrote about Bill Travis to now, you've evolved that character. That character is not the same person it was when you started. So how do you get the evolution in that person? Like, where does that come from? Like, how do you develop that character is what I'm asking.
You know, I'm really not sure. It's just over the course of all those books. Okay, so when you write book one, right, and it's done, a done deal, and you sit down and you're going to write book two, you have to remember to, especially if they're like chronological in time and, you know, it's sort of the same, some of the same characters, it sort of makes sense. So you have to remember or know what happened in book one. Well, try going to book 17 or book 18 and then try and remember everything that happened in all those books. It's not always easy to do that. But the one thing that remains constant is who this person is, and to a very marked degree that never really changes. Now, how he reacts to things sometimes change. I've noticed changes. I've noticed that over time, Bill has become a little bit more decisive, acting a little bit more instantly. And then afterwards, after, you know, it's sort of like shoot first and ask questions later. After it's all over, he can afford to feel philosophical about things and stop and think about things. You know, I have this idea, this theory that we didn't develop our brains until we ran into enough walls, you know, butted heads with enough wildebeests or something like that. We didn't develop any gray matter until we've done that. You ever notice a kid will like run into a wall, headbutt a wall or something like that, and then fall back on their behind, and then they'll just sit there and they'll think about it for a little bit. So I think the whole process of thinking has to do with collisions, the aftermath is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like even an emotional collision, like people get into a relationship and then they break up. Well, what do? After that collision, they sit and they think about it for a while. They muse on it. They're like, well, what happened here? Let me take stock. What were my choices? What did I do wrong? What, you know? And so that process, and so I have allowed Bill to only be very, very thoughtful about things after something big has happened. But usually it's just he's 90 to nothing. He's lightning quick. His reflexes are still sharp. I'm one of these guys that I'm kind of a big guy, right? I'm not a little skinny, you know, guy. I'm kind of a big beefy guy. But man, people have marveled that my reflexes are exceedingly fast, extremely fast reflexes for a big guy, how I carry myself and whatnot. Bill is not me, but Bill is a lot thinner than me. You know, I've never described what he looks like. And I had this lady one time that sent me an email telling me how she loves Bill Travis and how he's so cute. Right? So what I figured out from that what I've been guilty of doing here is I've been having the reader think that I created Bill Travis to look and be a certain way when it's them creating it in their own mind. So I'm getting them to create it themselves and attribute to me what they have created in their own minds. And that's not an easy thing to necessarily to do, but I think I've successfully done it.
Huh. Well, that's good. That's probably good. That's a good way to do it. On a lot of fiction writers that I talk to, I ask them about their main character and what uh-huh. that character means to them. Now, this might sound weird, but I have a lot of people that say they're like their kids, or they're very personal with their character. Do you find the same?
I'm a little bit proprietary about Bill Travis. It is personal, but he's definitely not my kid. He is like my drinking buddy, you know. he's like, you know, there's nothing else going on. So I think, I'm going to go check out and see what Bill is doing. And we'll sit back and have a beer, maybe even have a smoke. And just shoot the bull, and that to me is Bill. But I am proprietary about him. I can't see anybody else writing him, but maybe in the future someone could. But they'd have to know Bill. They'd have to be a Bill Travis fan. But you know, this series is just. I started this series because I actually wanted to learn how to write.
Okay,
so it
was a process for you, a learning process as well as a. So you learned. So are you saying then probably the newest book that you put out is better written than the first book?
Absolutely. Each one. Now that's the problem. This paradigm that authors have to get. I've got a good buddy, Tom Harris, who writes a wonderful, fantastic, galaxy-spanning science fiction. This guy, I think he got up to like 39 books in his main Adam Kane series, and he told me that every book that he wrote had to be better than the last one. It had to be bigger, more earth-shattering, more you know, more changing, more, you know, it just had to be. It's sort of like the sequel has to be the bigger blockbuster than the original, which is always a tough thing in the movie industry. They usually fall very far short.
Right.
But with a writer, we've got, it's the whole production. We don't have to rely on somebody else. We have to rely on us. And so it's not easy to do. But for me, it's the next book has to be better. And you know what? You know something? That this last book, the Emerald Waltz, which is sort of my version of the Texas version of Raiders of the Lost Ark. This particular book, I had so much fun writing this book. I just kept amazing myself, like, what? You know, like, oh no, wow. You know, so if I can do that to myself as a writer, or have the characters do that, or what's going on in the story, and yet, you know, even insert like the most insane plot twist, and it just comes off like a bomb. If I can do that and enjoy the writing of it, I know the reader is going to appreciate it. I know they're going to like it. And man, that is a different feeling. That makes me happy. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right.
There you go.
Now your characters, the supporting characters, where do you get them from? And I mean that in the sense of, are you that guy that goes, out in the shopping mall or in a coffee place or a bar, and you see people, and it's the way they act and how they behave, and you absorb that and use that as a character, or do you just come up with them out of the blue?
No, what you said, absolutely. I absorb everything I see, every person, every conversation. I've got a memory like an elephant, and I will, in a lot of times, they are composites of many different people, or they'll be similar to maybe one person, but not exactly. It's a tough one. But those secondary characters, and they are extremely important, and you don't spend nearly as much time on them as you do the main characters. So what you have to do is you have to create them with an economy of words, and you have to if you can succinctly describe them with a turn of phrase such that the reader goes, ah, ha, ha, yeah, I know that type of person right there. Yeah, okay, I got that. You don't have to say anything more weird. Just that, I got it now. If you can do that with a secondary character, then it doesn't take so much away from the from what you're actually doing with the story. The story for me is, all my stories are character driven, and so the characters are important to me. Not as important as the main character, but they all get to strut, they all get to dance on the stage, and everybody gets to see them. So they are important.
Do you take people you know? Like there was a few authors I've spoke to, like J.D. Horn, who says that he kills off people he doesn't like in his books. Do you do that sort of thing? Do you take people you actually have met or known and use them in the books? Without naming people, of course.
I could name them. Not purposefully. I don't set out with malice or forethought to do that, but I am guilty of having killed off people that I've known. Literary murder, And it's not very pretty, but boy, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And and particularly, you know, one or two women from the old days. Oh, that's just a beautiful thing. It's just a very heartfelt, beautiful thing when you can you go, okay, there is justice in the world, and I just created it. I will do that. I have to admit. Yeah.
Well, now we know. Now it's known.
Alan, I try to get people. Even everybody's trying. Everybody's doing the best they can with the information they have, and they, you realize that people are essentially and basically good, and they will do things that you don't like, and they will hurt you, and they will betray you, and all these other things, you know, because they're people that way. But, I try and give them benefit of the doubt, but still, there's just a little bit of residual rankle there, you know, and I'm just like, okay, all right, now it's my time.
Yeah, well, that's good. So is there an underlying, is there an underlying meaning or something in your book? So when someone walks home with Amarillo Waltz or one of your other books and they read it, after they've read it, other than the story itself, the basic, you know, storyline, is there an underlying theme you want them to walk away with? Is there something you want them to take home?
I didn't realize that there was until a while back when I was putting together all of my short stories in an anthology, not all of them, I think it was my second anthology. I was putting those together and I realized that I have never written a completed short story or novel that did not immerse itself in one theme and one theme only, and that was justice. There is justice, whether or not it comes from some governmental entity, a court or a judge or jury or what have you like that, or a cop or what have you. There is justice, and it's not in some afterlife or another life or what have you. It's right here and right now, and that gives me, at least it gives me, hopefully it gives readers, a sense of order instead of a sense of chaos. I mean, there's nothing nihilistic about any of my writing. It all has to do with justice and order. And I would challenge anyone to read anything I've written and show me how that this is not about justice, because I almost guarantee you it's going to be. And I'm not going to write it if I'm not interested in it. And for me to be interested in it, it's got to have some element of justice, because we find, I think that we see injustice all around us. We've all got injustice detectors going 24/7, and we go like, oh my God, what? How did that, we just like, and then we shake our head and we go, oh, you know, and, but in the.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The only way to keep any degree of optimism in life and not just give up is to realize that there is justice, there is order, and it's us who bring it. I don't trust justice in the hands, really, of a human being.
Right.
But, you know, there's situational justice, and it seems to come out in the end. You know, Joseph Mengele always gets, he always dies in the end, you know.
Yeah, well, but then that brings an interesting point, then, because if your ultimate goal is to show justice in some sense, are you concerned with the world of justice then? Like, for instance,
I am extremely concerned with the world injustice. And now we, like I said, we can talk about any subject under the sun. I probably want to stay out of politics here, and I probably want to stay out of just sort of like the what's going on right now kind of thing, regardless. But I will say that, I live out on the edge of the country.
Right.
I live in Austin, but on the extreme edge, we've got coyotes howling out here at night, and we've got foxes and deer, and we've got, red-tailed hawks and golden eagles, and I'm right on the edge of civilization out here. And, I am loaded for bear. And I don't think anyone wants to mess with me or this neighborhood, this property. My son lives down the street, just about 20 houses down. He's got two kids, two of my grandkids. And this where we live out here is just beautiful, and I'm going to protect it. I'm Tarzan here.
Okay? He's swinging from the vines.
That's right.
I understand that because I have a house. I'm in Canada, and I have a house up here, and the same sort of thing. You know, there's bears and cougars. Everything's all around. I get that when I stay out of here, especially now with things. But what I mean is, like, how do I put this? When things in the world or things in the U.S. particularly you. are going bad. So for whatever reason, so you can say COVID, you could say, you know, whatever, without even going political, because it doesn't have to be about that. Just when the outcome, when things are sitting kind of badly, shaky, and all that stuff. Do you end up writing in a darker way? Do you know what I mean?
I very easily could. I very easily could go down that path. But my outlook is, I like to think that my outlook is a little more positive. Things are going to come out, and in the end, it's a little bit more Bill Travis. But yeah, tempered with the reality of the surroundings. So, for instance, one of Bill Travis's things is he always tells his kids never to drink and never to smoke pot or anything like that, because you got to have your wits about you at all times. I've been known to have a glass of wine every now and then or something like that, but I will tell you that I do not, generally speaking, I do not indulge. And I like to have my wits about me, because it is incumbent upon me to be sure and certain in all of my actions. And when it comes down to it, and there's something going on, I'm usually the person in charge, and I'm usually the person that handles it. Let me tell you a brief story, if I may, Alan.
Sure.
Just by way of illustration. I was tooling down the street in the heart of Austin one day, and a collision occurred right in front of me. A little Chinese girl ran a red light and hit this SUV with a wife and a husband and their two infant children in it. Clocked them pretty good, going about 35, 40 miles per hour. And I immediately got out. The woman driving the car that was hit was about to attack this girl that hit her and her family. And I interrupted that, and I got this woman reoriented, got her back concerned about her husband and her children, and I took charge of the entire intersection. The ambulance showed up. We got them into the ambulance. We got the police showed up. The street sweeper showed up, cleared up all the glass and car parts and all that. I was telling the police what to do and what they needed to focus on, and everything was going on there at that intersection, but I was the author of everything that was going on. And then when the street sweeper finished, the ambulance gone, the cops left, no one had ever asked me for a report or anything. And I was the last person there, and I just went and got in my car and just drove away. Now, I did all this with a blinding headache. But the thing is that at that moment, I was the authority. And so I would tell the listeners out there that in any given situation, you are the authority. If you've got your snap, if you can make a decision, and you can make a snap decision and it be right every time, then you are it. And so that's an example. And I kind of live my life minute to minute, day to day like that. And I'm kind of, you know, buck stops here kind of mentality. I don't own any mega corporations. I'm not a governor or a president or anything like that. But we are all sort of the governor and the president, if you want to know.
Yeah.
And if everybody would act like that, be like that, behave like that, it'd be a much better world.
Yeah, it probably would be. But for some reason, we go through these ups and downs where, I don't know, people don't always take responsibility like that, right? So.
Yeah. I know. It's kind of sad. And that is also, you know, we're kind of taught to bend the knee to authority. And to hell with that. I'm not going to bend the knee to anybody. The only person I've bent the knee to is God. So I think that's the real answer to actually what is going on right now. The only way for us to get through it is to each of us be completely responsible for our surroundings.
Right.
And I think that's the only answer that I have. In order to do that, you've got to be completely unafraid.
Yeah.
That's also one of my potential detriments, is that I'm normally not afraid of anything. Nothing. Yeah.
Well, then there you go. Now, so what would be your advice then to someone that's starting to write right now? They're writing around, but they've never actually published anything. And what would you say the best thing for them to do is?
Oh boy. Well, okay. This is my little mini lecture, but my advice to them is that not to listen to anybody. Don't even listen to me. Don't listen to anybody for writing advice. You are the authority. You can walk. Okay. If you want to write, then you're probably also a reader. You have the ability to walk into a bookstore, pick up a book, open it up, read the first few lines, read the first paragraph, first page, what have you, and know almost instantly whether or not you like that book or you want that book. I mean, and your decision, your snap decision, will be right 100% of the time, because it is your decision. It applies to you. You have to treat what you write in the same way, and don't write anything that you wouldn't want to read. It's really pretty simple. And don't listen to experts. Don't listen to people tell you what you should or should not write, or how you should write. Now, there are certain rules of the road, mechanics, it's grammar and language and stuff like that. But the only way really to do that, okay, here's the thing. So it's your language. You can speak it. You learn from an early age how to speak. There's no reason that you are not an authority on the language that you speak. You know 1,000 times more than a foreigner coming here trying to learn to speak for the first time. You don't have that barrier. It's your language. You can think in it, you can read in it, and you can definitely write in it. So own it. It's your language. So forget about authorities. You are the authority. It is all up to you. And there's no reason why you can't be the most stellar writer on planet Earth. It could take one book. It could take 50 books. But it's all you. And not only that, you as a writer actually bear some responsibility for everything going on this planet. It's writers that come up with we invent the culture. Everything that we write, you know, it ends up usually in a movie or something like that. It usually influences someone somewhere somehow. And we're constantly refreshing. We're constantly, as writers, constantly creating the culture that we live in. So you actually have, and your perspective is important, but you have the responsibility to the human race to give them your unique perspective. Yours is, there's none other like it. It's yours. So just write and learn and hone your craft, hone your skills. You may be a quick study, you may be a slow study, it doesn't matter. If you've got some roadway ahead of you, you've got some time left in that body that you're carrying around every day and being moody with or whatnot, just use that valuable time and write. My wife used to tell me that, George, no matter what you're doing, you're always writing. You know, you're always working on a project. You're always writing something constantly. And that's okay. Can I share with you the writing scale real quick? The writing scale is very useful for new, fresh, young writers, and I figured it out one day. Okay, so there's a scale. You can put anything in life on a scale, right? So at the top of the scale would be the ideal scene. The ideal scene would be writing actively in present time. You're working on a project. You're working on a book. You're banging something out. Okay, good. Merry Christmas. You're there. Done deal. Okay? Writing actively. Top of the scale. Absolute top. Coming down from that mountaintop, what's next down the list? Well, you could say, well, planning to write or researching, or you could say hoping to get an idea, or have lost hope of getting an idea. You could say that those are all different parts on the scale, but really they're all one thing. And that one thing is the second slot on the scale, which is not writing. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all one thing. It's not writing. Whatever the reason is, I'm just not writing right now, man. You know? Okay. So anytime you're in a not writing condition or position, you need to start writing something. So always be writing something. Okay. And then there's actually an evil lower condition than not writing.
Do you have any
it's insidious. Do you have any clue what is lower than not writing on the writing scale?
Bitching about people that do write.
Well, you're very close. You're very close. Here it is. This is the big reveal here. Yeah. Okay. Lower than writing actively, lower than not writing is this one. Wrote. Look at me. I wrote a book. Wrote. It's so evil that you think that it's higher than writing actively. It's sort of like it goes down through the earth and out the other side and floats around the planet to the top where it's sitting falsely above writing actively. But it's not. It's lower down. So what I do when I finish a book, I put finish, the end, what have you, on the end of a book. I immediately open another document, title it, and write at least a sentence so that I'm actively writing.
Well, there you have it. Me too.
Well, duh. So, yeah, that's, and there's so much advice out there. You're going to find yourself as a writer. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about talking to the folks out there, the people who want to start writing. You're going to have every invitation to listen to someone expound on how you write. Okay. You're welcome to listen to them. But my God, please immediately forget everything that they said. I was doing a writing workshop with all these guys that are writers and whatnot. And this one guy he's a pretty good writer, but he was talking about, you must do this, you can't do that. No, never call it this. And so I made the mistake of listening to this guy's hour-long deal, and I came home from that. And I already had like 20, 25 books under my belt, you know.
Yeah.
I went home. I couldn't write for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until I expunged that demon. I'm not going to tell you who it was. He's probably still alive. Oh my gosh. No. Never. Nunca. No.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't go to any of those. I never have, and no interest in, and even, you know, book writing clubs and all these groups and stuff. It has to be something that inspires you, and I don't find those very inspiring. So,
yeah, no, they're traps. Generally speaking, there are some where you'll have someone that's very timid, right? you have a person that wants to be a writer and they're very timid. And they say, oh, well, they're my support group now. And and that's fine. That's fine. You can do that. Whatever. It's the rule of thumb is whatever floats your boat, man. It's fine. If it works for you, it's fine. But I'm just saying, generally speaking.
Generally, it costs money and you don't come out of it.
There's an old saying, everything in moderation, including moderation.
So, just off the side, why do you go into sci-fi and what you call steampunk and stuff like that? That's kind of a different type of writing than most of your novels.
Yeah, I don't do that unless and until I get a really stellar, over-the-top idea that compels me to do that, because it's not going to make me a lot of money. I'm not well known as a science fiction writer, but that's me when things are ordinarily going fine and I can let my hair down and I can do whatever I want to do. I just started a Western here the other day. It'll be my first Western, and I'm writing on it. But right now, mainly I'm writing on this next Bill Travis book. But I've got, four, five, six, seven books that I'm working on in present time right now. It's when I feel like I've done enough on this other, I can switch over. That's the other thing I don't believe in is writer's block. It's just a dearth of ideas or a dearth of others. You don't have enough projects. And if you have enough projects you're interested in, you can just switch, hit a brick wall, and you can switch to another project. Don't even hesitate. Just switch, man. Just do it.
So it doesn't matter to you if it's something you're known for? Like, if you go to write something, so you say, you're not going to make a lot of money. It's not really a money project. But you're still going to do it because it's something you like to do, right? Is that kind of how you say it?
Right. It's something I want to do. You know, that's the only freedom there is the freedom to decide something. And by God, if I can't write what I want to write when I want to write it, then flunk, I'm not doing the right thing. I'm not saying that I would write science fiction all the time if I had my druthers. I do enjoy reading it, but I'm very jaded when it comes to reading science fiction, modern science fiction. It's not a whole lot that really floats my boat. Every now and then I find a new author that's really over the top. But, man, you just can't beat a good old Heinlein or one of my favorite authors, Larry Niven. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I'd say I've got about 50 books down there that are Larry Niven. And most of my shelf is science fiction, but I've got other shelf, and those are all mysteries, and they're written by people that I know, And so I've probably got, and I'm just staring right now, I probably got about 200 mysteries on my shelf there, and I know every one of those authors. It's really weird, but I've been. You know that Joe Lansdale was the guy that made me decide for myself that I could write. I read Night Runners back in the 80s, right. And he's from Nacogdoches. I said, if this guy can do it, he's from East Texas too. If he can do it, I can do it. And now. We have, I go to his book signings, and he goes to my book signings, and we pose for photographs together. He was a god of my pantheon way back when. And now he's a peer, So that's, to me, that's something. I feel like I'm standing on the shoulders of, we all are. We're all standing on the shoulders of giants. And, that first book that new author puts out there, they're in the club. They're in the club now. I don't care, what lack of accolades they did or didn't get or what have you, but they're in the club, and so, you know, I welcome them. I like to help new writers the best I can. I like to foster them. I like to promote them. I like to help them format their books through this evil process of getting a book ready for publication. And whenever I can, I just go out of my way to do it. I don't know why I do that. But I should be doing something else. Oh, by the way, Kenny, I helped him with his memoirs. Kenny Rogers.
Yeah. It's good. I think you get something out of that. If you help another writer move forward, it helps you as well.
It does. And it's a humbling experience for me. I consider it to be a humbling. Some people might think, oh, well, he's just doing that so he can brush up his brass buttons. But no, I do that because if you're not helping someone somewhere, somehow, at some time, then you ain't worth shooting.
Well, that's there you go. couldn't say it any better. How do people get a hold of you? How do you like people to follow or reach out to you?
Well, they can go to my website. It's if you go to George Weir, WIER, georgeweir.com, there's a contact tab there at that website, and they can contact me. It just goes direct to my email, and they can contact me there. I correspond with a lot of people. And not only that, my readers, I don't have fans. I have friends who read my books. And I have been known to jump in the car and go visit people that are readers halfway across the continent. I welcome, I'll talk to people on the phone. I'll call them up and they'll say, oh, Mr. Weir, are you, you know, and I get to know them and consider them lifelong friends. And so I do welcome people to reach out and talk to me. You don't have to be a reader of my book. If you want to talk to me about writing, I welcome that. If you want to talk to me about, you know, making movies, because I also write screenplays and I've got a Hollywood manager now and whatnot. We're trying to break into the streaming services with the 1889 project. Got that serialized now. It's going to be fantastic when it gets picked up. I'm willing to talk to anybody on any subject, and I welcome people to come into my world. And I like to get to know them. Eventually, if I get to know them well, I'll use them in my books. I'll even put their names in.
You'll kill them off.
in a few instances, but usually if I know them well, I don't kill them off. I like to keep them around.
So. That's a good thing, you know. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time talking on the phone with me today and the interview. We're going to have your book and website up on ours as well. So thank you, Mr. George Weir.
Alan, I really enjoyed it. You're a really pretty sharp interviewer, if I do say so myself. I think that this was good. You got me thinking, you got me talking, and
that's right.
No telling what I said.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.